If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
Revolution in the air, tell me, brother.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up, get up, get up, get to me. Much, much, much to talk about. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Betty Lou, what's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to know a couple things.
Okay.
I'd like to know the difference between an ordinance and a law, and I would like to know if an ordinance supersedes a law.
Okay, what specifically are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about, a petition, the difference between a vote and a petition, too. I'm trying to figure it out in my mind, and I can't do
it. Okay, give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about, say, the Board of Elections.
Mm-hmm.
Is supposed to have made a law or an ordinance that once Alder person is recalled, that he can go out and talk to the people and have them change their minds about the way they sign the petition.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that's, it just doesn't sound right to me. It makes me really not want to sign any more petitions or vote, because if I vote, if I sign a petition and I feel one way, I don't think, you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. Somebody should be able to come back to you and try to get you to change your mind.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and I absolutely agree with you. I think that is really is ugly. I think that it's like when you walk into a voting booth and you cast your ballot. Nobody should be able to come back to you and tell you that you did wrong and try to get you to undo that. Not knock on your door and say, I know how you voted, because nobody's supposed to know how you voted. But when you sign a petition, people know what your position is. And for a person to be able to, I think it is problematic that with a recall campaign, that the person that you've signed a petition to recall has the ability to come and knock on your door and to browbeat you, or to confront you, or to question you. I think that's problematic. It makes me uncomfortable, and I think that maybe that's the point of it, to try to get people not to sign these petitions. Now, I believe it is part of the St. Louis City Charter that they can do this. There are things that can be challenged in a charter as to whether or not they are lawful. They have to be challenged, though, in order to find out if they are lawful. And I think that that is what is going on with the case of Freeman Bosley Sr., that there is a challenge that was lost in one court, but I really think they should take it up to the next court to challenge whether or not a person can come back after you've signed the petition. It's your name, it's your address, it's your decision, and whether or not he could come back and try to browbeat you into changing it out, changing your mind, or even talk to you about it.
Well, the attorney says not in the charter.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Well, that's the argument. So then, and a court didn't agree with them, right? So then they need to take it to another court.
Well, I suppose so.
Because you just got to, I mean, that's why they have the Supreme Court, for you to keep taking it to the different courts until there is a resolution on it, a final resolution on it.
Well, how does the First Amendment fit there when it comes to, you know, petitions? Because, you know, if a person can come and have you talk you into changing your mind, then what good is the petition? That's the way I look at it.
Well, that is a question on the validity of those petitions. I think that they should continue to challenge that, because it makes me very uncomfortable that somebody can come in and browbeat you or try to confront you on what you did.
And not only that, the person is back now and just harassing people.
I believe that.
And having people locked up and just doing all manner of evil to people. So to me, that is a violation of somebody's constitutional right, because Bosley's getting his rights, but the citizens are not.
Got to go. Thank you, Betty Lou. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is the sound of a bully at school.
Where'd you get the shirt? Colorblind and things?
And this is the sound of a kid telling her parents about the bully. If you don't hear about it from your kid, that doesn't mean it's not happening.
McGruff the Crime Dog here about how parents can tell if bullying is upsetting their children. Kids may avoid school. Grades may suffer. Stop bullies with words to your kids, school officials, or other concerned parents, and at McGruff.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Time has come today. Young hearts can go their way. Can't put it off another day. I don't care what others say. They think we don't listen anyway.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And my toll-free is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up, get up, get to me. Well, once again, ahead of the curve, out here talking about the issues. And it looks like the pressure that was put on folks, some It's turned out to be a impactful thing. Yes, it has. Remember how we talked about on the show not too long ago about how there was a spook in the Senate, that there was an effort by two senators to bring more transparency to our government. Specifically, there was an effort to put in a database all of the contracts, who got the contracts, how much the contracts were, have been, put them in a database, a searchable database. And there was a secret hold put on this piece of legislation. We couldn't find out who the hold was. It turns out that the hold was placed by two people, a Republican and a Democrat. A Republican senator from Alaska and a Democratic senator from Vermont put a hold on this piece of legislation. They didn't want this piece of legislation to pass so that people could actually do a database search, that they could find out how much their legislators are spending on contracts, where they are putting these contracts out, who they are hiring for these contracts. We talked about that, right? Found out who the secret holds were, and it looks like now that the legislation is going to pass, that we are going to have somewhat of a searchable. I doubt that it is going to be everything that we need it to be, but it is going to be a searchable database for us to be able to find out where the pork is, where the pork is. For instance, a $500,000 contract, $525,000 to City School District of New Rochelle for after-school learning centers. There are more than 2,000 pork barrel projects buried in House appropriation bills. And if you want to find out where some of your waste is, all you got to go to is porkbusters.org. Because it was porkbusters.org that uncovered who the secret hold was, Ted Stevens and Robert Byrd. And where is this pressure coming from? Is it coming from the New York Times? Nope. Is it coming from the LA Times? Nope. They're saying that what we're seeing today is probably the biggest expansion of government oversight that we will ever have. Because now we have an online database of all federal grants and contracts. Do you know what that's going to mean? You can type Lacey Clay's name in. You can type Carnahan's name in. You can see where these grants are going. You can type in somebody that you hear, you understand to have a hookup in the Congress, type their name in, and you can get find out what kind of contracts they're getting. And these are just regular people. This group, they looked at this one group called the Congressional Glaucoma Caucus Foundation. They are going to receive nearly $1.2 million to screen patients in New York, Texas, and the Virgin Islands. And then she unearthed the tax form showing that the foundation pays several six-figure salaries. Well, if you're only getting $1.2 million and you have several six-figure salaries in that $1.2 million, how many people are going to be screened for glaucoma? Nice money if you can get it. They're finding out things like this Ohio stands to gain nearly $34 million from 135 projects in the pending House appropriation bill. These are things that fund health, education, and labor. And they want to know where this money is going to. Huh. And what is fascinating is that what has happened to reveal this, you see conservatives and liberals colliding on this in a good way. Conservatives howled about this not having this database, and so did liberals. We had conservative groups like the Conservative Citizens Against Government Waste, to the liberal group Sunlight Foundation. They wanted to know about the earmarks. 10,000 projects costing $29 billion. Who's getting it? Huh. I mean, just feel this. One little person looked at the glaucoma Foundation, the Congressional Glaucoma Caucus Foundation. They received $1.2 million to screen patients in New York, Texas, and the Virgin Islands for glaucoma. That's pretty near and dear to me because black folks have a lot of glaucoma issues. My grandmother went blind from glaucoma, and so has my aunt. Glaucoma is a serious thing in the community of African descent. And this Congressional Glaucoma Caucus Foundation, after getting $1.2 million to screen, they found out that the CEO is getting $340,000. A consultant was given $100,000. A part-time treasurer was given $100,000. $300,000 plus $100,000 plus another $100,000, that's $500,000, $540,000. Who are you going to be screening? Huh. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Y'all can do some things out here. Y'all can do some things out here. 1-877-920-WGNU. Ain't that some stuff? $340,000 to the CEO of the Congressional Glaucoma Caucus Foundation. Nice money. That's what happens when there's no light. You're on the wake-up call.
You know, Wiz, it's kind of appropriate that the president made so much of yesterday. It'll be how he and his administration are remembered by the American people. Horror, chaos, suffering, pandemonium, panic. History will say of him, and this is the most tragic part, that he was a little man that tried to copyright a great national tragedy in which Democrats, Republicans, and independents and people who didn't vote perished, but he tried to copyright it for his own party, and that's the most tragic part. He will be remembered by the people as a president that brought utter hopelessness to his country and to the entire world. Thank you very much, Liz.
1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. I'll be back.
morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Route 21, Tesson Ferry at 270. There's a report of an accident. Eastbound 70 at KN 79, slow traffic there. Northbound 270 at 55 through Marshall. Look for slow traffic as well. Eastbound 40 from Woods Mill all the way into 270. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill and 270. Heavy volume in the right lane on those off-ramps. Westbound 270 at Old Halls Ferry and Washington Elizabeth. Look for slight delays. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to 270. Slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 55 at Lindbergh and Rivas Barracks. You've got slow volume going on there. Westbound 40 at McCausland and Hanley. Heavy volume there. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge as well as into downtown. Expect some delays getting to work this morning. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Now there are three new pick-and-play games, plus the four you already love from the Illinois Lottery. See retailer for details. Have a ball. Play responsibly. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day today, high in the mid-70s. This evening, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers, low around 60. Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, becoming partly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the mid-70s, and then Thursday mostly sunny with a high around 80. Currently we have 70 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 70 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake-Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Time again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension, these are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please, please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Sandra Ost, Treasurer.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hey everybody, I'm Scott Cooper. I want to invite you to tune in to my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on WGNU. Join me as I take you on a journey inside the incredible world of flowers. I'll entice you with ideas from weddings to home entertaining and so very much more. I'm all about flowers and a whole lot of fun. Please join me Tuesdays at 10 a.m. as we stop and smell the flowers right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Ride, 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 ride,
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. There's an article on the front page of the USA Today that I'd like to get your input on. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Says the United States calls itself one nation under God, but Americans don't all have the same image of the Almighty in mind. There's a study, a survey of about 1,700 Americans. They're saying that it's the most comprehensive national religious survey to date. Okay. They're saying that there are four, as a result of this survey, they've broken down people's understanding view of God into four different groups. People that view God as authoritarian, people who view their God as benevolent, people that view their God as critical, and people that view their God as distant. And they're saying that people's view of God tells more about people's social, moral, and political views. Okay? So, they say people either view God as authoritative, benevolent, critical, or distant. And here's the interesting thing. The authoritarian God is angry at humanity's sins and engaged in every creature's life and world affairs. He is ready to throw the thunderbolt of judgment down on the unfaithful or the ungodly. That's the authoritative God. The benevolent God, Protestants, Catholics, Jews see primarily a forgiving God, more like the Father who embraces his repentant prodigal son in the Bible. They're inclined to care for the sick and needy, ranks highest on the list of what it means to be a good person. Then there are those that look at God as a critical God. This group is more paradoxical. They have traditional beliefs, picturing God as the classic bearded old man on high. Yet they're less inclined to go to church or affiliate seriously with religious groups. They are less inclined to see God as active in the world. Their politics are not liberal, but they're not conservative either. And then there are those that view the distant God. No bearded old man we're talking about. This is as the strongest appeal for Catholic, mainline Protestants, and Jews. And so here's what's interesting is that they broke this down into race, age, gender, and education. They've also broken it down into the portion of the country that you live in. And here's what they're saying. They're saying that 29% of white people believe in the authoritarian God, 24% the benevolent God, 15% the critical God, 25% the distant, and 5% consider themselves atheists out of white folks that were contacted in this study. Here's what they say about black folks. They say that 52% of black folks see God as authoritarian. 13% see God as benevolent. 30% see God as critical, and 3% have a distant relationship with God, and there were zero atheists when the black people that they surveyed. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? And then they broke it down into how your image of God, your image of God, whether you see him as authoritarian, benevolent, critical, or distant, that is what determines your politics. But this doesn't make any sense, particularly if they're saying that black people see God as this authoritarian type of person or this being. Because they say that authoritarian, if you see God as authoritarian, that means that you want the federal government to advocate Christian values. I don't know any black folks that are saying that. That the federal government should fund faith-based organizations. 74% of those that see God as authoritarian believe that the federal government should advocate Christian values. That 76% of those who see God as authoritarian believe that the government should expand its authority to fight terrorism. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Expand its authority to fight terrorism. In fact, the authoritarian, those that see God as authoritarian according to this survey, they're the people that are right in line with all of Bush's policies, and yet they're saying that the largest majority, over half of black folks in this survey, see God as authoritarian. Strange. Check this out. Authoritarian folks that see God as authoritarian, they are opposed to gay marriage, 80%. They are support the war. They want prayer in school, 90%. They want 76% want the authority to expand, expand it to fight terrorism. Regulate business more closely. They want that less than any other group. And they want less than any other group to distribute wealth more evenly. And they want less than any other group to abolish the death penalty. And they want more than any other group to fund faith-based organizations. And they want more than any other group the advocation of Christian values. I wonder who they talk to in this survey. I wonder what kind of black folks they talk to in this survey. Then, insofar as white folks are concerned, it's split amongst pretty much evenly, with the highest number of white folks, 29%, believing in an authoritarian God. And again, the authoritarian God is the God that is angry at humanity's sin and engaged in every creature's life and world affairs. He's ready to throw the thunderbolt of judgment down on the unfaithful or the ungodly. Those who envision God this way are religiously and politically conservative people. They want an active Christian values-based government with federal funding for faith-based social services and prayer in the school. Maybe I'm just disconnected. 1-877-920-WGNU, 1-877-920-WGNU. And in the 9 o'clock hour, make sure you join us. Dr. Justin Frank is going to be here to help diagnose Boy George on the 5-year anniversary of 9/11. Since Katrina, since his wife left him to go live in the hotel. And in the next hour, we are going to talk about the voter ID bill in Ohio and the voter ID bill or the voter ID requirements going all across this country. You don't want to miss that discussion. So we talk with a member of the ACLU from Ohio in the next hour. My name is Liz Brown. Give me a call at 1-877-920-WGNU or 454-0400. I'll be back.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline New York, a new book called Without Precedent, The Inside Story of the 9/11 Commission, is extremely critical of the role former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani played in the disaster of the World Trade Center. While being portrayed as a sort of hero on that day for the image of strong leadership, the book says the tremendous loss of lives can be directly traced to 8 years of negligence and failed policies during his term. Family members of first responders who perished on September 11th say the same failed radio communication system that was used in 1993 during the first attack on the World Trade Center was still in use on that fateful day in 2001. The city never performed an emergency drill in the towers that involved multiple city departments and had no plan or command and control guidelines to deal with a high-rise disaster. There are also questions about the lack of building and fire code enforcement efforts, as well as no willingness to practice rooftop rescues from skyscrapers, especially after the first World Trade Center attack. The family say Giuliani's decision to divide the command posts for the police and fire departments is one of the main reasons why communication snafus developed and those inside the building failed to get the message to get out. Before his days as mayor, Giuliani was head of the criminal division of the Justice Department and served as U.S. attorney in Manhattan. He had always proclaimed his experience gave him a special insight into combating terrorism. There are also concerns about why he chose to put the city's command and control center under Trade Center Building 7, when the entire complex had been deemed the most likely place to be the target of another attack after the 1993 bombing. Another more suitable location for the command center was a site across the river in Brooklyn, which housed the city's new multi-million-dollar technology center. A command center could have been up and running in 6 months, but locating it in Building 7 took 3 years and cost the city over $60 million in rent and renovations. The Brooklyn location would have cost practically nothing. Officials who worked with Giuliani say he did not like the idea of having to cross the river to manage a crisis and preferred that it be within walking distance of City Hall. There's also evidence that the developer of the number 7 Trade Center, a man named Larry Silverstein, became a big donor to Giuliani's campaign when word got out the city wanted to locate the center there. Despite all this, the events of 9/11 have made the former mayor one of the Republican Party's leading candidates for the next presidential election. This is your wake-up call Global News Update. Time again to register for the Friday Because We Care drawing. Be the third caller at 454-6660, and your name goes in the box to win a Because We Care package this Friday during the last part of the 9 o'clock hour. The third caller at 454-6660 gets registered. Call now.
Get a free Razor cell phone delivered free to your door. Don't want a free Razor? Then go to letstalk17.com and choose from hundreds of other free phones. Join 500,000 users who found the smartest way to buy their cell phones. Never pay retail again. At letstalk17.com, you can compare prices on phones and service plans from all the major carriers. Find the coolest new phone at the coolest price. Find the best current special offers. Read what folks have to say about their phones and plans. They actually rate and review their phones and service plans so you know which ones to pick. Do it all in the comfort of your own home. If your plan is ending, now's your chance. Try your new phone risk-free for 7 days with free 48-hour shipping. Letstalk17.com is the only way to get the absolute best deal possible. Right now, get a free Razor after $50 mail-in rebate. This is an exclusive online offer at letstalk17.com. New 2-year service plan agreement required. One-time wireless activation and early termination fees may apply. Go to letstalk17.com. That's letstalk17.com.
No more calls for the Friday drawing. We have our winner. No more calls at this time, please. Thank you.
Hi, I'm John Womack. I'm the host of On the Table, a program about food and wine and enjoying yourself every Tuesday at noon. So tune in here on WGNU 920 AM.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Things may not go as you planned.
dark clouds might bring you pain, but I will be in your heart still, telling you don't look down, don't feast your eyes on things that are on the ground. And if it gets hard to focus when you're traveling almost at the speed of sound, feeling nowhere bound, remember what I told you and don't you dare look down.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up. Get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Glenn, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Brown. Hey, I just caught the last reading of the survey,
mm-hmm.
so I hope my comments fit in.
Okay.
But if you take out the war
mm-hmm.
and current events right now
mm-hmm.
and reinsert slavery, Reconstruction, the Jim Crow era, you got the same people. I mean, you literally have the same people who advocate basically this control mentality that, you know, it's all about them and everybody else don't matter, basically.
Well, this survey was about how people see God and that how you view God will determine what your politics are.
And many of those same folk had that same view because when you go back to the Jim Crow era, these people were going to church every day.
No, they were building. There were people that had enslaved people that built churches on top
of
enslavement pits and then pulled women out and raped them on Monday after church.
That's right. So you got the same people. I don't really know how to describe that character of a person who see God as this holy being, as you know all religions are. But then at the same time, themselves are just corrupt and then justified.
Mm.
You know, it is one of the most unexplained things to me, you know, that I see, especially today in politics with George Bush doing what he do. You know, 100,000 women and children dead.
Mm.
And this man says that
doesn't mention their
abortion.
Names. He doesn't.
You know,
yeah.
I'm against stem cell research, but.
Yeah.
You know, let's go and take out a few 100,000 people.
And doesn't mention their names. How come you didn't? And one of the things to me is that, okay, I love Americans. That's his position. Okay, I love Americans. Tell me why there weren't any flags flown at Katrina.
That's interesting. Never
you know, there are plenty of flags flown on September 11th. Where were the flags when you were down on the Gulf Coast?
That's interesting. I mean, I guess you can't score political points with that.
Well, you know, or who's American and who's not, you know, and how do you score points? It's not about patriotism. It's about using patriotism to your advantage.
That's right.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
1-877-920-WGNU. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm outstanding.
Yes, if you heard the sheikh from Iraq, the president of, what was it, in 05, he just left. If you heard him speak on C-SPAN about the war, and they asked him a lot of questions about what he feels about the Palestinians and the Jews, and he's saying he hates all types of suppression. And believe it or not, America has to be very careful. And I'm not anti-Semitism and all that, but we have an influence in this country that we're letting the Israelis dictate through their religion how we think, and it's becoming, that's why we're at war now, because we're trying to save a religion that is seemingly tied to our Bible, which may not be the true people of Israel. Do you hear where I'm coming from?
I hear what you're saying. Thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Brown.
Morning.
Yes, you were mentioning about this survey. Well, that is an interesting survey, but what they said, though, to me, is exactly the way that American people the ruling authorities uses American people. I mean, churches don't get tax exempt because of them preaching something good to the masses of people. They are teaching something that the 5%, the ruling class, wants these people to have. As long as I have a belief, then you can trust me. It's because what can a belief do? You see, if you tell me the reason that you are not doing something to me or mistreating me is because of a God, when common sense tell me if you change your behavior, things is going to change for you, no matter what you believe in. And you see, in their folks, they keep this God as a front to keep the masses and the poor peoples, which is the poor peoples and the middle class, thinking this. If you want to make black folks mad, tell them that you don't believe in Jesus. I mean, they'll get more angry than anybody else, you know? And the next thing is, if you look at the preaching and how the preachers interpret the Bible to you, they'll tell you that Jesus and God is the same. But they always tell you the only way that you can get to God is through Jesus Christ. I wonder why. Is it because he got blonde hair and blue eyes?
All right, thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. I haven't had a chance to talk about this, and I only have a few minutes to do it. But I'm gonna get my licks in before we get to our next break. I am sick of being told by Republicans. I'm sick of being told by ditto heads. I am sick of it. It doesn't take a village to raise a child. What does that mean? You hear these idiots saying that all the time. What do you mean it takes a village? What do you mean it takes a village? It doesn't take a village. It doesn't take a village. It doesn't take a village. Okay. Okay. If that's the case, then why are you asking my village to pay for your ballpark village if it don't take a village? Who are you to come to me and say that we need to give pampered, out of touch, non-St. Louis City living, greedy corporate execs, $600 million, more tax increments, money from our schools to build a ballpark village? That is absolutely outrageous. Oh, now it takes a village. Now it takes a village to do something. You want me to pay for your village that I can't afford to live in. Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? These guys are coming back after digging a hole, making it ugly, and saying, look, if you, gangster, these are gangsters. These are gangster and gangster tactics. You coming to me after you've dug a nasty old hole and said, look, we can't, you know, you're going to have this eyesore here. They quoted somebody in the Post-Dispatch saying, from Hannibal, saying it's an eyesore. They really need to do something about it. It won't be your taxes that are paying for it. Who are you from Hannibal to tell me that my tax dollars need to go fund these multi-million millionaires? Ain't that some stuff? Ain't that some stuff? This is $200 million more than the cost of the new stadium. $650 million to build this ballpark village. Weren't we sold that we were going to get a ballpark village? That's why we've got to tear down the old stadium. We're going to have bring all kinds of businesses to downtown. And what does Francis Slay's office say? Or Francis Slay's idiots. His spokesperson has said, asked about what criticism that might come for more public funding for the Cardinals. We've got a lot of small thinkers. They say you stupid. They say you stupid. And they're going to take your money. Yeah. It takes a village. You want my village to pay for your ballpark village, but nobody in my village can live in your village. Kiss my village grits. No. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back after this. Stay with me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle
against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. It was a close call for the U.S. Embassy in Syria. Militants stormed the property today and blew up a car nearby. More from ABC's Nick Watt in London.
The attackers also threw hand grenades over the embassy wall. American diplomatic staff were at work in the building at the time, but none of them were killed or injured during this audacious assault. Syrian security killed three of the attackers and injured the fourth in what eyewitnesses describe as a fierce firefight.
There were no American casualties, but the Syrian government says the incident was the work of terrorists. It's sure of it. It wasn't supposed to be political, but some Democrats aren't too thrilled today with President Bush's choice of speech last night to mark the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Here's ABC's Ann Compton.
Saluting the heroes of September 11th, President Bush threatened the enemies who attacked.
Osama bin Laden and other terrorists are still in hiding. Our message to them is clear. No matter how long it takes, America will find you, and we will bring you to justice.
But when he firmly tied his Iraq policies to the war on terrorism, the president drew criticism. War opponents like Senator Edward Kennedy called the 9/11 speech political. Ann Compton, ABC News, the White House.
The long summer vacation could be just about over for Detroit public school students. The teachers' union has agreed in principle to a new contract. If the rank and file ratifies it today, it could be back to class this Thursday. The price of gas is down an average of 22 cents a gallon over the past 2 weeks. And if you're looking for the biggest savings, head to the Heartland.
In the Midwest, we're averaging about $2.44. Additionally, the prices are pretty low in the Gulf region. There, they're averaging about $2.50.
ABC News personal financial contributor Melody Hobson. NASA isn't wasting any time in getting the first spacewalk of the shuttle mission underway and completed. Atlantis astronauts Joe Turner and Heidi Piper are now installing a new addition to the International Space Station. This is ABC News.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day, the night, the next plane flight, job interview, or social event. Maybe you'll have a drink. Maybe you'll take another pill. Maybe you're so anxious and depressed that you just really can't help yourself. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? Anxiety and depression are two of the most common reasons people take prescription medication, abuse alcohol, and make excuses for why their life isn't working. This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence and dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that could help you get your life back. You want to feel better. You just don't know what to do. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me help you help yourself.
For your free tape that could change your life, call 1-800-446-2204. That's 1-800-446-2204. 1-800-446-2204.
Forget the new math. It's back to basics in many schools. Here's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
It's back to the basics as far as mathematics teachers are concerned. A report from a council representing 100,000 math teachers is said to contain recommendations that schools focus early and often on fundamentals, adding, subtraction, multiplication tables. The Wall Street Journal reports the advice is a reversal of nearly 20 years ago when critics complained kids were being taught fuzzy math and falling behind children of other countries. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Think it's hard to find a job these days? Well, guess what? There are a lot of employers who say it's just as hard to find good workers. The latest survey that was done by temp firm Manpower Incorporated says, in fact, most companies say there are so few workers they would consider hiring that they're going to keep recruiting right on up through the end of the year. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Burnsmeyer with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, Americans are remembering those who died on September 11, 2001. Hundreds gathered at the Anheuser-Busch Soccer Park in Fenton yesterday morning to take part in the St. Louis Area Freedom Walk. Chris McCarthy, a Fenton firefighter and paramedic, helped out for nearly 2 weeks at Ground Zero.
Chaotic is an understatement. And over the course of our days there, chaos became more controlled. There was a lot of emotion. Once you stood at the foot of the pile, it was overwhelming at how you didn't realize the magnitude of the incident.
Nearly 3,000 people lost their lives in the terrorist attacks. Police are looking for suspects in a fatal shooting north of downtown St. Louis. 24-year-old Montez Brown was shot and killed on the corner of 17th and Cole around 6 o'clock last night. Police say the shooter went through Brown's pockets and appeared to steal something before running from the scene. Finally this hour, a Cole County Circuit Judge's order will force a proposed tobacco tax hike onto the Missouri ballot in November. Secretary of State Robin Carnahan had said the petition for the tax hike didn't have enough signatures to make the ballot, but the initiative's backers sued to reverse that decision. A judge ruled yesterday that there were enough signatures on the petition and ordered Carnahan to certify it. This WGNU News report is brought to you by McDonald's. Hey Cardinals fans, did you get your turn 2 with McDonald's coupon yet? 2-for-1 Cardinals tickets, final home games of the season. Hurry in while there's still some left. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Eastbound 44 at Murdoch, there's a multi-vehicle accident. Only right lane is getting by. Traffic slowing around Big Bend. Westbound 70 at Blanchett Bridge, look for an accident. Two right lanes are blocked. Expect delays. Eastbound 70 at KN 79, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Teton Ferry all the way through Marshall, look for a very heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 from Ballast through Clayton Warson, you can expect some slow traffic going on there. Westbound 270 at Newhalls Ferry and Graham Hanley, heavy volume in pockets. Northbound 55 at Lindbergh and Rivas Barracks, look for some delays, as well as westbound 40 from McCausland through Hanley. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge, as well as rolling into downtown, you can expect delays on the Eads Bridge and the King Bridge, as well as the Poplar Street Bridge. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Now there are three new pick-and-play games, plus the four you already love from the Illinois Lottery. See retailer for details. Have a ball. Play responsibly. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day with a high in the mid-70s. This evening, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers with a low around 60. For Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny by the afternoon with a high in the mid-70s, and Thursday, mostly sunny with a high around 80. Currently, we are hovering right at 70 degrees. Lambert Field is also reporting 70 degrees and some light drizzle. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
To you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up, get up. Get to me. We have much, 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 much to talk about. 1-877-920-WGNU. We have an election coming up in just a couple of months, an election that is going to determine the majority of the House and perhaps the majority of the Senate. One of the things that has occurred in the last couple of presidential elections is an effective tool by those that want to maintain their majority in the White House, their position in the White House, an effective tool. We're going to find a way. I mean, people say that Republicans don't have a relationship with black folks. Yes, they do. I think that's unfair. I think that you're being unkind and you are actually assessing the circumstances incorrectly. Republicans have a very consistent relationship with people of African descent, voters. They pursue black voters in a way that I think they spend more money on black voters than the Democrats do. Yes, they do. They spend more money attempting to find ways to make certain that black people, brown people, you cannot vote. They understand the power of the people of African descent and our commitment and our history of voting, the fact that we will vote against with guns. We will vote with people with guns holding guns on us. We will vote with dogs. We will vote with hoses. We will vote. That is the history of the people of African descent in this country. And the Republican Party understands that. So one of the things that they have done across this nation is to find ways to try to get that vote down in a way that an unleashed dog could not. No better example of this is Ohio. Ohio determined the last election. They're still recounting those votes. A judge just recently ruled that the Secretary of State who wants to be the governor, but he's not doing a very good job of making that happen. Wanted to destroy those records. A judge said, no, we're going to keep those voting records so that we can try to assess what happened in the last presidential election. That aside, we've got midterm elections coming up. And Ohio finds itself once again in the eye of the storm with their new voting legislation. Ohio House Bill number 3. We need to talk about this, and we're gonna. With Meredith Bell-Platz, counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me. because we got some sick, twisted stuff going on here in the state of Missouri as well, attempting to keep people, keeping your grandma and grandpa from voting. Stay with me.
Find out how National City Business Sweep Checking gets you the most out of your money. Log on to nationalcity.com or stop by any National City branch today.
From A to Z, the Black Business Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs.
E.
Do you need a lawyer? A caring lawyer who listens to you? Well, call Earlene McAllister Thomas, 454-1811, for divorce, child support, child custody, criminal defense, accident, workers' comp, name change, or traffic case. Call Earlene Thomas. She's an excellent trial attorney and an aggressive advocate. 454-1811. Don't forget, always check your decks.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Brethren, I wish above all things ye prosper and be in good health, even as the soul prospers.
Join Minister Ernest Greenlee, Miss Daisy, and Doc Brown every Tuesday evening at 8, beginning September 12th, for the Pastor's Hour to Empower here on AM 920 WGNU. Learn about real solutions to real issues. What is wealth without good health? What is good health without wealth? Learn how none should suffer lack. That's the Pastor's Hour to Empower, 8 to 9 every Tuesday evening, beginning September 12th, on AM 920 WGNU. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Meredith Bell Platts, counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. Meredith, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm outstanding. I am outstanding. Tell us about this Ohio House Bill number 3.
Well, it wouldn't be an election year if we weren't suing Ohio, it seems.
True fact.
Following the 2004 election, obviously most people are aware that there were problems in Ohio. The General Assembly enacted sweeping legislative changes, and this is all sort of codified at House Bill 3. We have recently filed a challenge to one provision of this statute, and that is the challenger statute. And again, that sort of popped up in the 2004 election also. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there were a lot of challenges of predominantly African-American voters in the state of Ohio challenging that they weren't lawfully registered voters, that they didn't live where they say they lived. And this was brought by, you know, various partisan officials. Well, those challenges were stopped, but one thing that the state looked at is, like, well, how can we get around the problems that we faced in 2004? And so very cleverly, they crafted this Section 350520, which drastically changes the challenger provisions and actually makes it harder, particularly for naturalized citizens, to cast their vote. So we are bringing a lawsuit to challenge this, and have very strong law on our side and should prevail here.
And give us the example of how this would work. I walk into a voting booth or walk up to a polling place, and I am Hispanic.
Sure.
And I walk in, and I've been voting for the last 25 years. And who has the right to say something to me under the under 350520?
Yeah, the big difference here is before, you know, anybody in the polling place could challenge you for not being a citizen of the United States. Now it's left up to the election judges, the election officials, the people who are normally known as poll workers, to raise a challenge to your eligibility.
And what do they look at to determine whether or not they should raise a challenge?
Well, and that's very unclear right now. We believe that it's going to lead to racial and ethnic profiling at the polls. Look, if you look like you're somebody who might not belong in the United States based on somebody else's perception, then here's a way to call you out, make you step aside and answer questions and challenge you. And when they do that under the current version of the law, it's highly unlikely that your vote will count.
So they can just look at you and say, give me your papers, please.
As far as we know, that is how the law is written.
And what does a person have to bring with them what's the burden on the individual who is being challenged?
Exactly. That's precisely the point here. You're going to be asked a series of questions, and one of those is, are you a naturalized citizen? I mean, are you a U.S. citizen? And if you are a U.S. citizen by birth, you can swear and say, I was born in the state of Ohio. I'm a citizen. And then you can go ahead and vote a regular ballot that will be counted. If, however, you say, I was born somewhere else, I became a U.S. citizen through the naturalization process, then they're going to ask you to present your certificate of naturalization.
Well, wait a minute. If I say I was born in the United States, why wouldn't I have to prove that I was?
For some reason, the state of Ohio has decided that they would like to just create this new double standard. So if you were born in the United States, you don't have to show a birth certificate. You don't have to show anything that proves that you actually are born in the United States. And I would not encourage the state of Ohio to adopt that more stringent policy. But they have singled out naturalized citizens as if they're second-class citizens of the United States.
But doesn't the fact that they are not demanding that of anybody that says that I was born in the United States, and they are demanding it of people that say that they've been naturalized as a citizen of the United States, isn't that separating people out?
It certainly is, and it's a violation of our Constitution.
So I walk into the polling place and somebody looks me up and down and says, show me your papers. Were you born in the United States? I say, no, I was not born in the United States, but I am a citizen. Now what happens?
Well, here's where the problems start. Most people do not carry their certificate of naturalization on them. It's a rather large document. You don't use it for your daily life. And so most people, if they know where it is usually in a place where it's not easily accessible. One of our clients, for instance, has hers stored in a bank security box. So if you don't have that on you, you cast a provisional ballot. And again, we know all of the problems that come with the provisional ballot.
Well, articulate those for us.
Well, if you cast a regular ballot, it is presumed valid, which means they are going to count that ballot at the end of the day, and it's going to be included in the total. If you cast a provisional ballot, you run the risk of having to go through additional steps in order to prove you are who you are, and then that ballot still may not be counted. So you've gone through all the motions of voting plus additional steps that other voters don't have to go through, and then you run the risk of your ballot may or may not count.
Can you ever find out if your provisional ballot was counted?
Yeah, under the new provisions of the Help America Vote Act, they are supposed to provide you with an 800 number or a website where you can find out whether or not your ballot was counted, and if not, what were the grounds for it not being counted.
And at what point do you find out whether your ballot was counted?
Well, you have, after Election Day, you have 10 days to correct whatever problem there is, whether it's a registration issue or, in this case, the certificate of naturalization. And then, it depends on the state, but usually you have an additional 2 to 3 days when they're certifying the election results for you to find out whether or not your ballot was counted.
Now, is that unconstitutional that you have to go through those kinds of changes to see if your ballots are counted?
Well, in the case of here, where you're talking about a distinction based on a completely irrational justification, whether how you got your citizenship versus whether or not you are a citizen, then yes, we do argue that it's unconstitutional and it amounts to a poll tax. Because when you think about it, the cost of going and getting that certificate of naturalization, of making the additional step, and if you can't find it at all, it costs you $220 to replace your certificate of naturalization and can take up to a year to get it.
So you may not be able to vote at all.
Your vote, if you
your vote
have
may...
it, if you've lost it, your vote is definitely not going to be counted because you will not be able to get that certificate in time.
And how did this, how did 350520 happen?
Very sneakily, it appears. There's not a whole lot of legislative history on how we got to this point. I think, you know, I would hypothesize that they were looking at the Challenger problems before, and they were trying to make them, you know, more centralized and controlled by removing it from everyday voters to conduct the process into the election judges. And then somehow this provision came in there. I don't necessarily believe that it's an accident, but there's no history on how this became part of it. However, the Challenger statutes have always been used as a means of racial profiling.
Explain.
You know, from the very first inception, it was to keep pure-blood white American males as the only ones who could cast ballots, and
whatever pure blood means.
Right, exactly. If someone didn't believe that you fit that category, then they would challenge you on that. And we've gone through many, many iterations of this throughout the country, and here in Ohio, there's now a problem where they're going to single out naturalized citizens.
So the the citizen that says I'm a citizen, but I'm naturalized, walks to the polling place, that they're challenged, they're looked at, they're challenged, and they say that I don't have my naturalization papers with me.
Mm-hmm.
They are then told what?
They're told you can vote provisionally, and then you can come back to the County Board of Elections and show your certificate of naturalization. Otherwise, if you don't show that within 10 days, your ballot is not going to count, despite the fact that you may have voted for 20, 30 years.
And in the state of Ohio, how many citizens are we talking about? How many? What's the projection of who this law, how many this law impacts?
Well, as of the 2000 census, it's over 165,000 voters. That number has probably obviously increased. We project that to be now about 177,000 voters.
Can somebody who says, I was born in the United States, can someone challenge them on that, say, I don't believe you?
No. At that point, they have to take their word. At least that's how the law reads. If you say you were born in the United States, your oath, your word is sufficient to cast a ballot.
So then why doesn't everybody just go in and say, I was born in the United States?
Well, of course, you swear that the answers that you're providing during the challenge process are true and accurate under penalty of perjury. So if you lie, you're now guilty of perjury and can be prosecuted for that.
Let me get to a caller question here. Bev, you have a question for our guest, Meredith Bell-Platz.
Not a question. Basically, it's a couple statements since we have the situation here with my husband. He was born out of the United States. His parents were actually naturalized citizens when they were young children. Then you have, remember, Vice President Agnew, for instance. He was born out of the country. His parents were born here. There are so many different situations. It's amazing. People aren't always born in the United States, even though their parents are citizens. I guess people have to get he has naturalized papers because my mother-in-law foresaw that when he was like 16 or 17 that he'd have a problem. But you're right. And those papers are very large. You're right.
All right. Thank you, Beth. And I guess that brings up two scenarios. One, if Beth's husband would be challenged when he walked in, first of all. And secondly, what do we do for people that have had naturalized papers that don't have them and haven't had them for 20 years? We're going to be talking more about this with Meredith Bell Platt. She's the counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project. Joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by New Advil PM. Westbound 270 at Graham Hanley. There's an accident. Right lane's blocked. Traffic slowing near West Florissant. Eastbound 44 at Murdoch. That accident's been cleared, but traffic's still jamming all the way back through Big Bend. Westbound 70 at Blanchett Bridge, look for an accident. Two right lanes are blocked. Expect major delays there. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry all the way through Marshall Road. Expect delays on either side of 44. And all your approaches into the Poplar Street Bridge are delayed at this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by New Advil PM. Aches and pains keeping you up? And big news, New Advil PM is here. The multi-pain relieving power of Advil plus a gentle sleep aid. New Advil PM. Stop hurting and start sleeping. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Showers and thunderstorms throughout the day with a high in the mid-70s. This evening, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers with a low around 60. For Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, partly sunny. For the afternoon, high in the mid-70s. And Thursday, mostly sunny with a high around 80. Currently, we have 70 degrees. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@WGNU.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
From A to Z, the Black Business Rolodex can meet all of your shopping needs. OJ Photo Supply, a standard of quality service since 1970. 8338 Olive. Cameras, digital cameras, photo restorations. What's the best film for my camera? OJ Photo Supply can answer your questions. OJ Photo Supply, 8338 Olive, 991-5550. Don't forget, always check your decks.
This is Alan Brainerd. Join me Wednesdays at noon for Design 411 on AM 920 WGNU. No matter where you live, no matter what your lifestyle, you'll find out how to turn your ordinary home into an extraordinary home. My guests and I will give you the 411 on everything from classic design to the newest decorating trends. Join me, Alan Brainerd, for Design 411 every Wednesday at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your home.
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I am talking to Meredith Bell Platts, counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project, and she is joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. Meredith, welcome back.
Thank you.
This issue that people are facing and voters are facing in Ohio is not unique to Ohio, is it? There are efforts afoot all across this country.
There are various ways in which, you know, the vote can be shaved off, and certainly Ohio is not the only state going through problems. Missouri itself is facing problems right now.
In fact, there's a lawsuit that is pending right now to challenge our poll tax law.
Yeah, there are three lawsuits
yes.
pending right now in Missouri to challenge that one.
Right, and are you familiar with enough with that to share some of that with us?
I'm somewhat familiar. I am also representing a group of citizens of Missouri in federal court there challenging the ID law in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these laws are not unique. You know, the first version of it that we saw is from the state that I live in right now, Georgia, where they're now trying to require voters to come in and show ID, photo ID, government-issued photo ID, in order to cast a ballot. And all of these laws are solutions for want of a problem. You know, there's no evidence of people coming into the polls impersonating other lawful voters.
There's nothing out there like that to show that this is any kind of problem in the United States at all.
Right. No information whatsoever. Where there has been election fraud has typically taken place in the absentee balloting side of voting. And, you know, ironically, Georgia and Missouri have made the ability to vote by absentee easier, and they don't require the ID to vote absentee. But for people who want to come to the polls because, you know, for instance, my grandmother fought for her right to vote. She shows up every time she can in order to cast her ballot. For those types of voters, they're making it more difficult by saying you have to show ID.
And don't we also have to talk about the poll tax component of this, Meredith, in terms of here in Missouri they sneakily said, well, you know what, we're going to issue these ID cards for free. But there's no mention of the fact that, well, the governor has reduced the number of licensing places for people to get their IDs. And secondly, if you don't have a birth certificate, you've got to go get a birth certificate, and that's not free.
No, it's not. And those facts range from $10 to $20. And why are we charging people to go through these steps?
That they've already been voting, and they've been voting for decades.
Exactly.
And then if you don't, and what if the name on your birth certificate, because my 85-year-old grandmother is not trying to get a driver's license, okay?
Sure.
So she doesn't need to have a birth certificate to get a state ID because she doesn't need one. So her birth certificate doesn't have her name on it. It has Baby Girl Brown on it.
Right.
So she has to get a name change on her birth certificate in order to take that birth certificate to the driver's license bureau to get the ID. And that
exactly.
costs money.
Exactly. And, you know, for people who are born by midwife, for instance,
mm-hmm.
there are, you know, certain states you didn't have to get a formal birth certificate. And those voters are going to be essentially shut out of the process.
And then if people don't care about older people, don't these laws also impact college students?
Yes, they do.
Talk to us about that.
Well, say, for instance, you lived out of state, you decide you're going to come to Missouri to go to college. Your driver's license is from the state from where you came. You have no reason whatsoever to get a Missouri driver's license, but you do want to vote in Missouri elections. You don't have a photo ID that's going to meet the law. And there's no recourse for you except, of course, the provisional ballot, subject to whether or not your signature on the registration form matches the signature that you put on the provisional ballot.
And also, if you, and these are for students that have been voting for the last 3 years. They live,
yes.
they live here most of the year. They know about the politics that are here. They are vested in it because their university is located here. All politics is local. So I voted in the state where I lived when I was in college.
Exactly.
So these students now have to go, they have to go get their birth certificate. They have to go through the changes of getting another driver's license.
Right. Exactly.
And what and that impacts on students have enough things to do. taking them through all these kinds of changes is, we want more people to vote. We want it to be as easy as possible for people to vote, don't we?
Exactly. And our whole goal is, I find it ironic that we named this statute that has sort of brought all of this about, the Help America Vote Act. Because what are doing with this has nothing to do with helping Americans vote.
No child left behind.
Yeah.
And every child's left behind. So they're very good at that. They're very, very good at that. 1-877-920-WGNU. We have some folks that have some comments or questions. Aleem, you have a question for our guest Meredith Bell Platts.
Yes. What about a person who are American citizens? They have two American parents, but say, for instance, their family was overseas when they were born, like on vacation, or an American family that is part of a military family, they lived overseas.
They were stationed overseas.
Exactly.
Thank you, Aleem.
All right.
Meredith.
I'm not sure if I fully understood what the caller was asking. Is this a person whose parents are U.S. citizens, but they themselves were born overseas?
Correct. They weren't issued a birth certificate from a United States hospital. They weren't born on American soil. How do they, would they have any problem with voting under the laws that exist in Ohio or here in Missouri?
Well, under Ohio, it's silent. That person would not be considered a naturalized citizen. They would have a different certificate, which is called a certificate of citizenship. And the Ohio law is silent on that issue.
But if they were asked, were you born in the United States, they would have to say no.
Right. And, you know, that's what we're concerned about. There's so much ambiguity and arbitrariness to the process.
But their vote, technically, their vote could never be counted.
Right.
Because what's required for it is a naturalization form. And they don't have one, do they?
No, they would have the certificate of citizenship, which they could then bring in also. But, we're classifying voters based on where they were born, regardless of the fact that they are actually U.S. citizens. How you get your citizenship is immaterial to whether or not you are a U.S. citizen, except for, whether or not you want to run for president one day. And to break down voters and make it harder for one group or two groups of voters to go through this process is unconstitutional and it's undemocratic.
And it is so fascinating to be living in a country that has made it so easy for, Rupert Murdoch, who wasn't born in this country, to own all kinds of television stations and newspapers. It's okay and easy for him to do that, but now it's hard for us to vote?
Yeah.
Let me get to another caller or two. Shu, you have a question for Meredith Bell Platts.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing?
Hi.
I'm in St. Louis, so, I kind of expressed a feeling about voting and stuff like that. And when I was having problems with voting, I also ran into a brother with the provisional government, Republic of New Africa. So I started voting for them, which we already had our own government. But see, that type of stuff been happening for a while now, from the vote frauds and everything like that. Because actually, when they say a person come from another country, as long as you're black, we're all foreigners, no matter what language we speak. We just been brought here. So actually, they should have a right to come over here and vote as well as every other black person on this planet, wherever they want to vote. Because
all right. Thank you, Shu. Thank you. And these laws, who do they impact on? Who are the people that are being culled out and cut out with these so-called voter ID acts and laws?
Well, the voter ID laws obviously target people of color. I mean, almost regardless of what state you're looking at, if you look at the census data, it shows that African Americans own their cars less than white Americans do. People who live in rural parts of these states, what is their need for a driver's license in most cases? What is their need for a U.S. passport? The extra $20 to go and get your birth certificate or to get an ID or to go to, the DMV and stand in line.
Or to hire an attorney to change your name on a birth certificate.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you're making it for the truly disenfranchised people in the United States, you're making it that much harder for them to exercise the rights that they fought to have.
And you have, don't you have to, Meredith, weigh that against what is it that you are trying to prevent?
Exactly, which is why we keep bringing up the fact that there has been no fraud in this particular type of alleged voting fraud. You know, you even have the governor of Missouri having declared that Missouri elections were fraud-free. Well, if they're fraud-free, what is the point of having these types of laws that are going to make it more difficult for, you know, 6% of Missouri voters to vote?
And how do you define fraud? We have had cases here in the state of Missouri where people attempted to register dead people to vote. But the Board of Elections caught it. So how is that fraud if your system caught somebody trying to do something that they didn't do? So that wasn't a crime that was committed.
Right. And if you have, you know, safeguards in place that can catch these problems and have proven effective, it makes these types of changes that much more suspicious.
And we're going to take another break, folks. I am talking to Meredith Bell-Platt. She is the counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project. She's joining us from Atlanta, Georgia. We'll get to more of your calls, your comments, your questions, your concerns. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me.
Find out how National City Business Sweep Checking gets you the most out of your money. Log on to nationalcity.com or stop by any National City branch today. If you have suffered roof damage from the recent severe weather, Phil Person Roofing is still a name you can trust. Licensed and certified for commercial and residential jobs, Phil Person Roofing offers free estimates for all work. To contact Person Roofing, call this special emergency number, 602-1047. That's 602-1047. Phil Person Roofing, 602-1047. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline, Houston. Some 300 patients who received a new treatment for back pain are suing on the grounds they did not receive sufficient information on the possible dangers of the procedure. A device called a Charite artificial disc was given permission for use in the United States 2 years ago after being used in Europe for about 15 years. It is touted as being able to prevent the need for spinal fusion by replacing damaged spinal discs. The artificial disc is supposed to give patients some degree of movement, which theoretically should reduce pain. Pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson bought the rights for the disc in 2003. Since approval, over 5,000 people in the U.S. have received them as implants in their spines. The suit alleges that no long-term test results were compiled, and even with the discs, many patients wound up having spinal fusion anyway. A 2-year trial study indicated a 57% success rate, even though 3 out of 5 patients still had to take painkillers. As of the middle of this year, the FDA says it has received some 130 reports of adverse effects on patients who had the Charite disc surgery. The top problems were the disc moved out of place, surgery had to be performed to remove part or all of the disc, and more surgery had to be done to correct problems created during the initial procedure. The lawsuit says the product is unsafe and a 2-year study was way too short to evaluate a product that is supposed to remain in a person's spine for decades. The issue of spinal surgery is now under scrutiny because the cost was over $3 billion last year for spinal fusions alone. Earlier this year, Medicare stopped paying for Charite disc procedures for people over the age of 60 because the cost was running as high as $50,000 and Medicare felt there was not enough evidence to determine that the price was reasonable and that the procedure was even necessary. This is your wake-up call, Global News Update.
Not since the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s can I think of any bigger initiative that will empower African Americans to have control over their life than the stem cell initiative.
Dr. Michael DeBon, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine, explains why medical experts, faith leaders, and community leaders urge a yes vote on Amendment 2, the Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative on the November state ballot.
Diabetes, sickle cell disease, hypertension, These are the type of diseases that occur in our families, in our community. Stem cell research could lead to cures for those diseases and many others. Please, please join me in voting yes on the Stem Cell Initiative to ensure that all Missourians will have equal access to future stem cell cures. Thank you.
This voter information paid for by the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, Sandra Oss, Treasurer.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryant.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. Don't forget, in the next hour, Dr. Justin Frank will be joining us. He's the author of A Bush on the Couch. We've had many things happen since we last had a conversation with Dr. Frank, things that we need to analyze. So don't forget, in the next hour, Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, analyzing the psyche of George W. Bush. I know an hour's not enough, but we're going to make do. My guest this hour is Meredith Bell Platt. She is counsel for the ACLU's National Voting Rights Project, joining us from Atlanta. And Meredith, talk to us. There is good news out here. Talk to us about what happened in Georgia.
Well, in Georgia so far, we've been able to stop the implementation of their voter ID law. We have another hearing scheduled on Thursday to deal with keeping it out of a special election that's scheduled shortly. But so far, our judge has been, you know, very diligent in looking at the Constitution and seeing how Georgia's going about implementing this and stopping it.
And what were some of the ways that Georgia had intended on implementing their Voter ID Act?
Well, you know, we've gone through many versions of it. In 2005, they just sort of blanketly said you have to, instead of bringing, you know, the one of 18 versions of identification or none whatsoever in order to vote, they reduced it down to 6. At that point, they were not making those identifications free. So it was a very clear poll tax argument.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge saw that. We put on evidence from many voters who would have been affected who didn't have that extra $20 in their pocket to go get the ID. Again, as we talked about earlier, though, even if you make the ID free, which Georgia did attempt to do, you still put voters through these extra hurdles, these extra burdens, and those burdens impact people, you know, who have the least amount of time, who have other things on their mind to take care of in their daily lives.
And again, I just really want to say this again and again and again and again. We're talking about people in a lot of cases who have been voting for decades.
Exactly.
You know, we're not talking about people that are just walking into the system. Now you're saying to people, you're calling everybody's a criminal.
Right.
You're saying that we think that somehow you are fraudulent. Prove who you are after 30 years.
And shame on Georgia and shame on Missouri and Ohio and the rest of them who look at voters, people who are necessary to make this democracy work, and assume that they're out to defraud the system. You know, why would that be your first thought about someone who's coming in to exercise their constitutional rights?
And particularly in light of there's never been any proof that that is.
Right.
Except in the 2000 election.
Well.
Except in the 2000 election.
I think we'll be trying to clean up those problems for decades, unfortunately.
Let me get to another caller. You have a question for my guest.
Good morning, ladies. Yes, I was delivered by a midwife, and when I turned 21 50 years ago, I decided to get a birth certificate because of a job I was obtaining. Luckily, the midwife was still alive. I would like the lady to comment on the difficulty of obtaining your birth certificate or other proofs of birth if you've been delivered by a midwife and she's passed on. I was fortunate the lady was still alive.
Thank you for your call and question.
Certainly, for people who were born by midwife, for some people who have been adopted within families and have a different last name that they've been operating on, there's pretty much nothing you can do. Now, some people who are born by midwife have the option of using the U.S. Census to go through and proving your date of birth, but these are time-consuming processes.
And we haven't talked about that either, because I know here in the state of Missouri, there has been little to no information out here to citizens about what they're supposed to do in 60 days.
Yes.
You know, I mean, in 6 and 8 weeks, there's been no information. So there are going to be... Most people, when they walk to the polls, are not going to have known about these changes.
Of course not. And, you know, in all of these states that I've looked at that have implemented these or have attempted to implement these laws, you know, there has been minimal amount of voter information made available.
And the way that it's being described here in the state of Missouri, it's being called the Jim Talent Protection Act.
Yes.
But this is about partisanship, isn't it?
It is partially partisan. I have not yet seen a state where a Democrat has proposed this as a solution. But it's going to affect, you know, even people who the Republican Party aren't counting on, the elderly particularly. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times they just have not calculated through who's going to be disfranchised by this.
And how do you, here in the state of Missouri, we just had a report coming over the news that they've downgraded the amount of people that would be impacted by this from somewhere in the neighborhood of 200,000 people, 200,000 plus people, to 100 and something thousand plus people. How do you assess who's going to be affected by this?
Well,
can you accurately assess that?
Well, you know, and the first thing that I would like to bring up on that point is, why is it okay for 100,000 people to be disfranchised?
Mm.
You know, just because the number is less than what you claim that it's going to be, why is it okay for any lawfully eligible voter to be turned away from the polls because of the law that you created? But how this is usually looked at is, you know, in most states, and I can't speak with great detail for Missouri on this point, but here in the state of Georgia, for instance, you have a database of eligible voters. You also have a database of people who have, you know, driver's licenses or people who have, you know, the state-issued identification cards. And you can match up those lists and come up with this number. And that's usually how that number is derived.
And then how could you, what's the argument for making that kind of a change? How could you then, once you match those numbers up, why would the numbers drop?
And again, it's sort of, it depends on the state of the database. You know, I don't know how the state of Missouri goes from what, you know, Secretary of State Carnahan announced as, you know, roughly 270,000 voters, how they then come back and answer with the 100,000 voters.
Well, I guess it's who's counting and why.
Exactly. And even here in Georgia, we've had arguments over whether or not it's 650,000 versus 500,000 voters.
And both, all of those numbers are obscene.
All of those numbers are obscene. I would say one is obscene.
Absolutely. Steve, you have a question for my guest, Meredith Bell Platts.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, how exactly is it that people will be disenfranchised at the voting booth if this voter ID card could also be your driver's license? And just a quick hint is, I've heard this. I just want some confirmation. Is it that the liberal Democrats are fearing this because they're afraid that it's going to cause a reduction in their support coming out? That's what I've heard coming from the more right wing people. Is that the liberal Democrats are scared, therefore you have the ACLU coming out representing.
Okay, thanks for your question.
Well, first of all, the ACLU and my office are nonpartisan. We don't bring laws because they disfranchise Republicans or Democrats. We bring them because they're disfranchising voters. I don't care how somebody votes. I want them to have the opportunity to vote. Now, the argument about what the driver's license requirement does, there are Americans, lawfully registered voting Americans, who do not have a driver's license, who do not have a passport, who have no need whatsoever to use those items in their day-to-day existence. They are allowed to exercise their constitutional rights. That is guaranteed to them by the Constitution. And just because you may not have an ID in order to go bank, there are Americans who do not bank and don't need to have an ID to do that.
And don't want to.
And the right to vote is fundamental. It is preservative of all of our rights in the United States. It is what defines us uniquely as Americans, not whether or not you have a driver's license.
And how scary is it that we are having citizens out here raising the question of or pushing the issue that, well, you should have an ID. You know?
Right.
No, you don't have to if you don't want to in America.
Right. Your rights shouldn't be denied because of that.
Meredith Bell Platts, thank you so much. Where can people go to find out more information about this?
Well, our website has a lot of information on it, and that is voting rights.org. And there are several other organizations out there that are also doing work on this, but I would direct you to our website for more information.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Take care now. Listen, folks, don't forget that Dr. Justin Frank is going to be joining us. We got to get Bush back on the couch. I got a whole lot of questions for him. I'm sure you do, too. Stay with me. I'll be back.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. The White House said President Bush wouldn't get political in last night's address to mark the fifth anniversary of the September 11th attacks. But this was political for some Democrats.
Our enemies in Iraq are tough and they are committed. But so are Iraqi and coalition forces. We're adapting to stay ahead of the enemy. And we are carrying out a clear plan to ensure that a democratic Iraq succeeds.
How mad were they?
Not a minute after the president was done, my BlackBerry was brimming with emails from top Democrats saying the fact that the president focused on Iraq was political by its very nature.
That's ABC News Chief Washington Correspondent George Stephanopoulos. The Syrian government is calling today's failed attack on the U.S. embassy the work of terrorists.
The botched attempt at taking over and bombing the American embassy in Damascus resulted in a huge gunfight between security officials from Syria and the four militants trying to get into the embassy. At least 10 passersby were hurt. It's not clear about their nationalities, but at least one Chinese diplomat was hurt. There were no American casualties in either the raid or that gunfight.
ABC's Matt Gutman in Jerusalem. It's hard enough to practice in the water, but spacewalking for real is even tougher. That's what one of the two astronauts performing one today says. They're installing a new addition to the International Space Station. The long summer vacation is about to end for kids in Detroit.
No classes have been held in Detroit public schools, with the district seeking a pay cut to cover a $90 million deficit. But with frustrations rising and in the face of a back-to-work order by a judge, the school board and the union reached a three-year deal. Teachers are scheduling a ratification vote tomorrow, and if they say yes, they'll be in class Thursday. Dick Hafner, ABC News, Detroit.
Want to go to Harvard? You'll have to wait. It's ending the early admissions program.
Harvard is really making a bold move to try to level the playing field.
That's Professor Christopher Avery, who says the early admission program discriminates against poor and minority students. ABC News Money Scope, Dow up 20 points in early going. This is ABC News.
You may be sitting there right now wondering how you're going to make it through the day, the night, the next plane flight, job interview, or social event. Maybe you'll have a drink. Maybe you'll take another pill. Maybe you're so anxious and depressed that you just really can't help yourself. Do you worry yourself sick, beat yourself up, or put yourself down? Anxiety and depression are two of the most common reasons people take prescription medication, abuse alcohol, and make excuses for why their life isn't working. This isn't the real you. You used to be happy and have confidence and dreams, remember? Well, it's time to get it back. You owe it to yourself to pick up the phone and call for a powerful free tape that could help you get your life back. You want to feel better. You just don't know what to do. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me help you help yourself.
For your free tape that could change your life, call 1-800-446-2204. That's 1-800-446-2204. 1-800-446-2204.
It's back. Another season of ABC's Dancing with the Stars begins tonight.
Season 2 of Dancing with the Stars had the NFL's all-time leading receiver, Jerry Rice. In Season 3, it's the NFL's all-time leading rusher, Emmitt Smith.
I have a long way to go and a short time to get there.
Country star Sarah Evans will be strutting her stuff.
For the most part, it's really not as hard as you would think.
The most interesting casting.
Jerry! Jerry!
Jerry Springer.
No one thinks I should do this.
And political commentator Tucker Carlson.
You can't worry about, you know, how dorky you look when you're learning.
You can insert your own bow tie joke there. Dancing with the Stars airs tonight on ABC. David Blaustein, ABC News.
Putting off having kids for now, it may help your career, ladies, but it could affect your health down the road. That's what a British study says. But before that gets your clock ticking louder than ever, keep this in mind. Researchers also found problems for women who had too many kids, who had them too young, or not spaced far enough. Bottom line, talk to your doctor. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, America shouldn't let its guard down. That was the message from Lambert Airport's Federal Security Director Bill Switzer yesterday on the anniversary of 9/11.
I think everybody still needs to be vigilant. We're in a different time frame now, working with a different world, terrorists nationwide. And I think overall, I think people still need to be vigilant no matter where they are.
Transportation Security Administration workers observed a moment of silence yesterday morning to remember the victims of the terrorist attacks. The TSA was formed after the 9/11 attacks to help prevent another tragedy. Overland police need the public's help to find a missing elderly woman. 80-year-old Eleanor Kramer was last seen yesterday morning around 8 o'clock at the Overland Community Center. Kramer is described as white, 5'4" and 102 pounds, with brown hair and hazel eyes. She may be in a light blue or gray 1989 Toyota Cressida with Missouri license plates 748EFR. Police say Kramer may have the beginnings of Alzheimer's disease. Anyone with information is asked to call Overland Police at 314-428-1212. Finally this hour, less than 2 weeks after receiving honors from the city, St. Louis Blues guitarist Benny Smith is dead. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports that Smith suffered a heart attack Saturday and died Sunday night at the age of 72. Earlier this month, St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay honored Smith just before he performed at the Big Muddy Blues Festival. Smith played alongside many artists, including Ike Turner and Chuck Berry. Funeral arrangements are pending. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota dealers. You can help a child excel in school. Through September, donate school supplies to KidSmart by dropping them off at your local Toyota Dealer Service Center. Toyota Service Centers, now that's a smart choice. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by New Advil PM. Northbound 70 at Gravois and Marshall, that traffic's returned back to normal. Westbound 44 at Lewis, look for construction. One lane's closed. Westbound 70 at Fifi and 270, look for construction. One lane closed. And as a matter of fact, there are a number of areas that you have construction zones going on throughout the St. Louis metropolitan, St. Louis County, St. Charles County, and Metro East. So just use caution and slow down through those work zones. Other than that, the King Bridge and the Poplar Street Bridge will start to thin out this hour as morning rush is subsiding. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by New Advil PM. Aches and pains keeping you up? Big news. New Advil PM is here. The multi-pain relieving power of Advil Plus, a gentle sleep aid. New Advil PM. Stop hurting and start sleeping. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday, showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day today, high in the mid-70s. This evening, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers low around 60. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, becoming partly sunny throughout the day, a high in the mid-70s. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high around 80. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 72 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 71. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution. The air fills the brothers. Help me, sister.
The truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. The number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Don't forget that the show is archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. So if you've missed an hour, go get your hour. We have much business to tend to. Get to me. I don't know. I watched the speech of George W. Bush's last night. I watched it. And I listened to it. And I watched the mannerisms exhibited by George W. Bush, and then I went to the internet. I pulled the speech down, and I copied the words, and then I began searching. Again, I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't play one on TV either. But as a layperson, and a person that has been here for a little over 3 decades, I see some scary patterns and some words that give me pause and quite frankly, are rather scary. I looked at the number of times that George Bush used the word attack. I looked at the number of times that George Bush, in this 12-minute speech, used the word terror and terrorists. I looked at the fact that George Bush referred to this as a struggle. Let me be specific. George Bush said, "This struggle has been called a clash of civilization. In truth, it is a struggle for civilization." Scary words. And we have to take a look at these scary words. We have to understand the meaning behind the manner of the man who would make these comments. We're going to have that discussion this morning when we talk to Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Is it rational to refer to terror 18 times in a 12-minute speech and not refer to peace once? I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us. I'll be back with Dr. Justin Franks. Frank.
Find out how National City Business Sweep Checking gets you the most out of your money. Log on to nationalcity.com or stop by any National City branch today.
Hi, everybody. I'm Regis Philbin, and I'm here to tell you that America is on the move. By making just two small changes to your daily routine, you too can experience what these folks have and improve your health. Just listen.
America on the Move is for real people of all ages and sizes. I started moving a few years ago. My pedometer keeps track of my steps.
My cholesterol level has actually dropped 40 points.
We've changed some things about our diets to be a lot healthier, but we didn't cut out the things that we enjoy. And I think that's something that really works for me about America on the Move.
We walk every street in our town.
Every morning before work, off we go.
America on the Move wants to help you get healthy right where you live.
Celebrate America on the Move Month at the YMCA during the last week of September. Log on to AmericaOnTheMove.org to find fun events at YMCAs and other locations near you.
Make today the first day of a healthier way of life. America on the Move.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
There is a term that beats steady and strong. It does not know defeat. I feel it proud. And know the sound of truth. In every soul, there is a memory of standing tall. The proudest we could be, I cannot fall. For I recall, we were born in majesty.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I am having a conversation with Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Dr. Frank, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you here.
I wish it wasn't necessary.
I wish it wasn't either. I wish it wasn't. There's just, and no offense, please, no offense on this.
It's okay. I had hoped my book was going to be remaindered on November 3rd, 2004.
You know, but
I'm really pissed. Pardon my French.
And no offense, but there's some nutty stuff.
It's very nutty. Well, that doesn't offend me. It's more business for me. But the problem is they never come to my office.
Oh, Dr. Frank, let's start with first the. Because some people would say, well, who are you to be able to analyze or assess the psychological makeup of someone who has never gotten on your couch? How does that work? Can we analyze people from afar? Is there a science for this or is there a practice for this?
Well, there's a long tradition of analyzing people from afar as long as you can get up close to their records, to what they've written, to people who've known them, to examining their memoirs. There's been a tremendous precedent for doing what's called applied psychoanalysis, which is the application of psychoanalytic principles to examining either public figures, historical figures most commonly, or sometimes even fictional figures. Lots of analyses of various characters in Shakespeare even. But the most important thing, I think, is that with George Bush and with other political leaders, there's a wealth of information that is public from their speeches, their writings, what's written about them, from all kinds of videos and radios, and what you did by downloading his speech last night and then studying it and working on it and trying to look for patterns in it and certain keywords. That's doing an analysis that then you can, over time, look at patterns that are similar in other speeches of his and begin to see certain things that will help you think about him and about his agenda, both consciously and unconsciously.
And don't we also have another advantage that most of the time doctors don't have when they're analyzing people that do come and get on their couches? We have books about the parents of an individual and memoirs by parents, information that most children don't have when they come and speak to a doctor about that their mother doesn't understand them.
Right, exactly. We have a tremendous amount of information, even though many of those books by the parents or about the parents are, you know, vetted and cleaned up. There's a tremendous amount of interesting material. For instance, Barbara Bush wrote two memoirs, and in those memoirs, it's interesting to look at just the amount of space she devotes to George Bush compared to the amount of space she devotes to her son George, to the space she devotes to her son Jeb.
And let's talk about the amount of space and the meaning of the amount of space.
Right. Well, the amount of space is much smaller for George, and the question is, since he's her firstborn son, in most traditional families, the firstborn son gets the most press from the mother, especially. But what happened in his case was that after the next child, who was his sister, died when Bush was seven. And so I think that in some ways the mother wanted to start over. And so with Jeb Bush, there was the new family, and he was like the new firstborn son. And George was sort of left to his own devices and was a difficult child in the first place, always running around and hyperactive. But there's much less space left to him. I think unconsciously, it's just a guess about Barbara Bush because I haven't really studied her. But my thought is that he must be linked in her mind with the death of Robin, who was the daughter.
And there was some odd and problematic behavior exhibited by the mom at the death of the after the death of the daughter Rob and when she died.
When she died, there was no funeral. There was no talking about it in the family. She was like a forbidden topic.
George didn't even know.
He didn't even know. He was then told 2 days afterwards that his sister had died. He was running up to the car to see them come home when he was at school, and he was wondering where Robin was, and she, of course, was not there.
And as a doctor, what do you make of a parent that has no funeral for their child, doesn't talk to their oldest child about that? What do you make of a parent like this?
Well, I make the most obvious thing I make is that this is a person who can only manage feelings by completely suppressing them and making them go away or trying to make them go away. This is a person who has an iron will, who is able to really try to, and usually successful at, keeping all feelings under wraps, especially things that are upsetting or unsettling. So she and her husband played golf the day after Robin died. Mm. Robin was named for her mother, her Barbara's mother, Robin. And it's interesting that that when Barbara's mother died, Barbara did not go to the funeral of her own mother.
Mm.
Claiming that she was pregnant and couldn't travel, but that was really a pretty lame excuse.
Mm. And so when we fast forward to a Barbara that is at the Superdome or in Houston after Katrina, and the comment that she makes when she looks out at thousands, tens of thousands of people
that have
been displaced, and her comments are, well, this is better than what they're used to.
Right, and this is the attitude of, this is the reflection of her incredible amount of contempt. She makes Marie Antoinette look like a generous person. You know, the Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake when people were screaming for bread. In the French Revolution, this is a woman who really is extraordinarily cold. And Bush and the entire attitude of this presidency is not that different. In fact, it's as cold as any you can get. The firefighters in 9/11 who were heroes, as they call themselves, they've gone from heroes to zeros. That 5 years later, they're having terrible lung symptoms, the ones who survived, problems of dust inhalation with all kinds of things. going wrong with them, and they're getting no coverage from insurance, no coverage from the government, no help at all. There's no help to the Iraqi war veterans who have had head trauma. There's the bills are being defeated, and Bush is really refusing to push for help. He is really opposed to individual people or to helping people who are suffering. He is a very cold-hearted person who is like taking over where his mother left off as a very strict, cold, destructive person.
Do we also see a measure of cruelty in George Bush? And can you point to any examples in his childhood that would support that?
Well, that's the other thing about doing psychoanalysis this way. You can see patterns throughout his life. This is a man who has, as a child, was extremely comfortable being cruel, and it was one of the outlets, I think, for his own nature, but also for the death of his sister. But he triumphed over helpless animals by expressing cruelty, which I think is a way of dealing with his own fear of helplessness. So he was cruel, for instance, when he was 10, 11 years old. He used to stick firecrackers into frogs after a rain in Texas and blow them up.
Now, can we just stop just for a second there? Does the age of an individual that engages in this kind of cruelty to animal, does it say, for instance, more that it's worse for a 10-year-old as opposed to a 3-year-old, or is it the same thing because they're both exhibiting these habits? 11 sounds awfully old to me.
11 is very old. It is much worse for an 11-year-old than it is for a 3-year-old. 3-year-olds normally do things like that. They grab, squeeze, tear apart. Part of that is their curiosity. Part of that is their own destructiveness that is natural at that
age. And myopicness. I'm the only, when the sun goes down, the world ends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And their incapacity to feel concern at that age, although they start to, for damaging other people or for other people. And so, when the sun goes down, the world ends.
Mm-hmm.
When they close their eyes, the world
mm-hmm.
ends. That's why they're afraid to go to sleep. There. Or have their parents leave. Well, in his case, by the time you're 11 and you're doing that kind of behavior and being really destructive, that is a cause for serious alarm. The thing is that he was able to hide it from his parents, and they really weren't paying much attention to him, so he'd get away with things. He used to, after I wrote my book, somebody sent me a tape of a speech by Neil Bush talking about how when they were kids, he, Neil, and the others were kids, George, the big brother, would line them up in the hall and shoot at their butts with BB guns in the hallway of their house and have them run down the corridor. I mean, this is when he was 16 and they were like 10 or 11 or 5.
He was 16.
He was 16 then when he did that.
And, I mean, there seems to be a butt fixation.
Yes,
I mean,
that's another part. There is definitely a butt fixation, and there's lots of anti-gay and gay bashing. There's a tremendous amount of preoccupation with the holes that the terrorists hide in. I remember there was all this talk about caves and holes and smoking them out, which certainly can be linked to various kinds of flatulent imagery. And then there's having that gay reporter sneak into the White House and be very close to the Bush people.
He wasn't.
Was not really even a reporter, and he was running gay, porno sites. And
he was actually an escort. He was
a gay escort.
Escort.
And he was but there's a preoccupation, I think, with the terrorists are out to get us. They're going to sneak in and get inside, and it's very much a very anal kind of behavior and anal preoccupation that he has.
And there's also an example of when he was in college, a rite of passage that he engaged in with coat hangers.
Right. Yeah. He used to brand pledges. He would heat up coat hangers at Yale. He was at Yale in the Deke House. He would heat up coat hangers and brand pledges on the buttocks, on the naked buttocks, and that was the first time any of his cruelty became public, because one of the pledges either complained or one of the parents of one of the pledges complained, and because his family was a famous family by then.
And Dr. Frank, we have to take a quick break, but I think it's instructive that people understand where the branding took place. This didn't take place on the cheek of the rear end. It took place someplace else.
Yeah, it was right at the rectum, right above it.
We're going to take a break. Folks, this is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. We will be back. Stay with us.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
Check out the Earthways Energy and Recycling Festival on Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4 each day. It takes place at the Earthways Center of the Missouri Botanical Garden, and admission and parking are free. For more information, visit earthwayscenter.org or call 314-577-0220. News you can use and reuse from Radio Free St. Louis.
We all know the scenario. You see a for sale sign and think, I want to invest, but real estate is complicated. Well, help is here. Hi, I'm Lorraine Davis, home mortgage consultant with Wells Fargo.
And I'm Jacques Land of the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis.
We're the host of WGNU's newest show, Let's Get Wealthy.
Our show provides real techniques for the everyday consumer on how to own a home and build wealth.
Tune in to Let's Get Wealthy every Wednesday at 11 a.m. because today is the day to get wealth for yourself. Sponsored by the 100 Black Men of Metropolitan St. Louis, Wells Fargo Housing Foundation, and produced by the Platinum Group.
Around the world, behind the story. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Down by the river, taking off my shoes, jumping in the water, washing away these blues. Down into the ocean, current takes hold. Words already been spoken, tales already been told, hearts already been broken, wounds already been healed. Do you wanna be loved? Do you wanna be loved for real?
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I am talking this hour to Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, and he is joining us from Washington, D.C. Dr. Frank, we were talking before the break about this anal fixation of George Bush. Recently, there have been stories that, within the last week or so, there have been stories about a particularly vulgar habit that is expressed by George W. Bush, he puts people in his office in a situation where new recruits are brought into him, and he passes gas in their presence.
And, I just heard about that.
And,
yes.
And what do you make of that as a psychiatrist? What do you make of that type of behavior? Is this another act of cruelty? Is this another act of dominance? Is this a childish act? Or should we just blow this off? What should we make of it?
Well, I would say that you have just made what there is to be made of it at basic psychological levels in terms of interpersonal psychology, namely that it is about dominance. It is about both indifference and triumph over the other person and making the other person extremely uncomfortable. And it's also being a fraternity boy. All of those things are true, that it is childish, that little kids do that. They love, products of their own body. They love the freedom to be able to do whatever they want.
And it's
crapping in their pants when they're two, for instance.
And I understand, I hang out with a couple little boys myself, and anything that, and when you go to a movie with little boys,
they laugh and giggle
about the butt. Everything about the butt is hysterical. I get that when you're 4, 5, and 6 years old,
but not as an adult.
Not as an adult.
No, and he is really arrested at the emotionally. He has never really progressed beyond the age of 10 or 11. I think that he stopped around the time of the frog incidents. I think that after that he never became a real sexual being, an adult man, anybody who could really feel compassion or concern for other people. Those things really became impossible for him. So he is both a clown in his office when he gets these people and is acting like a child, but he's also expressing his cruelty and his dominance. The other thing is that at an unconscious level, although once I say it, it won't seem so unconscious, flatulence like that in the presence of somebody else is also an acknowledgement of a wish to poison them and to get to hit them with poison gas, and that unconsciously it is a very destructive or, you know, nasty act to do, especially if it's repeated and done consciously. And that unconsciously, in my experience, in my practice, people who do that and make a joke of it, it's one thing to do it, you know, sometimes people fool around with their spouses or in bed and they make flatulent take pleasure in that. And it has to do with being a baby and taking pleasure. But at an unconscious level, when you lock somebody in a room and trap them, it is much more unconsciously malevolent, I think, in my experience. And that's how it's always been in my practice, in my office, and that's how I've interpreted it when patients are like that, which is not that common, but they are. Some people are like that. And it's very much like George Bush. He is, you know, when you were quoting his speech, I think you really, you know, to analyze his speech, for instance, would be extremely important, because there's certain psychological principles that you've already raised that are in his speech. For instance, when you use the word disturbed by a clash of civilizations, which is really, he said, a struggle for civilization, I really think that his flatulent behavior reflects his struggle against civilization. Mm. That unconsciously he is against civilization, that his behavior in Abu Ghraib, that his constant support of torture is against civilization. And that when he said in the speech, one of the things that you listen to with a speech and as a psychoanalyst, I listen to projection, namely how he attributes something in himself to an enemy, or a quality in himself, or things that people should be afraid of. He puts in an enemy, but he's actually announcing who he is and what the issues are. For instance, he says that freedom is frightening to terrorists. Mm-hmm. Well, freedom is frightening to him. Mm-hmm. That's why he opposes free press.
Projection.
That's projection. So he essentially is saying that freedom is frightening to terrorists, but actually it's frightening to him.
Mm. And one of the things that you mentioned, this joking of George Bush, what has been called by assessed or assessed by the press as this joking nature, there is a whole lot of cruelty in the so-called joking that he does with press that he also exhibited as a child, didn't he?
Yes, he was very much like this as a child. I mean, you see that he's extremely consistent.
Give us some of those examples.
As a child, he was known as a bully. He would tease people. He's quite a smart man in his own way, and his particular kind of intelligence. He's able to really look at people's vulnerabilities and then go for the jugular and really put them down. He did that as a child. He did that in prep school with a kid who was of Asian descent, I think, and he used to call him Cochise, and the kid finally blew up or confronted George when he was in the 11th grade and said how humiliating and infuriating that was, and George said, oh, I didn't know, I'll stop. And so the next day he called him chief or something like that. Mm. So it's like, I mean, the story backwards, but it's the same thing. He is a guy who will continually be cruel, and whenever he's confronted will act for a moment embarrassed or, you know, contrite, and then he will go ahead and do it again. There's a long pattern of his verbal cruelty in the press and all of that. This is a consistently cruel man.
Well, let me ask you a question. I guess because things are falling apart, it's getting clearer and clearer and easier for people to see the state that we are in as a nation. Even the supporters of George Bush are now raising some questions or making some comments. And let me ask you this. There was one one person on television that has been a lapdog for George Bush raised the question, is George Bush an idiot? And my question to you, Dr. Frank, is that the question to be asking?
No, that's not the question. The question is George Bush destructive? Is George Bush interested in consolidation of power above all else that has nothing to do with the best interests of the American people? Is George Bush some version of a terrorist? Is George Bush a person who is hiding the way Osama bin Laden is hiding, except he is able to hide in plain sight and that nobody can get to him? And he's surrounded in the same way that Osama bin Laden is surrounded, although Osama bin Laden is in a cave somewhere or hiding. George Bush is surrounded by people who are just like him, by the press, by his close advisors. He is not an idiot. He is a person who cannot think in certain ways because he splits his world into black and white, right and wrong. He splits everything in terms of opposites because that's his way of managing anxiety. He has to simplify. But that doesn't make him an idiot. It makes him limited in terms of his range of options. He cannot think in a nuanced way. He actually is not able to think or entertain an idea and really think about it. He just says, well, you're wrong if you disagree with him, or they're out to get us. You never see him actually thinking. So that's why the question arose, is he an idiot? And look at what's happening to our country and how it's going down in so many ways. You know, his attacks on science are violent and vituperative and vicious. His attacks on education are the same. He is completely spending us into the ground, so there'll be no public programs. All of those are aimed at being destructive. Now, why would somebody want to be this destructive? I don't know. Why does he want to, you know, pass gas when he locks people in the room? This is what he's doing to our nation. He's passing gas on all of us.
And let me ask you this. One of the things that has also been assessed about George W. Bush is that he has what appears to be an absolute lack of curiosity about the world that he lives in. Is that an accurate assessment? And what is the meaning, what is the impact of no curiosity?
Well, the meaning of no curiosity and the impact of no curiosity is that you don't want to know things that might make you uncomfortable. So curiosity, there's an old saying, curiosity killed the cat. he has taken that to the extreme because for him, curiosity means putting him in the position of having to reassess things or think about things, of having to actually be anxious, of having to face things. And this is something that he really does not want to do. He has, in that sense, he's quite fragile in terms of his anti-curiosity pose. The other side of it is that he's so successful at it that unless there's natural disasters like Katrina, he essentially can get away with being incurious. And meanwhile, go along his destructive path. And when you asked at the top of the hour, the beginning of our conversation, how can the psychoanalyst understand and make comments about this person without seeing him, I mean, if people read the book, it's interesting that he keeps writing new chapters for the book, but they're never different. They're just more examples of his destructiveness, of his comfort living outside the law, of his abuse of religion and taking advantage of people, and of his cruelty, and of his making a mockery of his mother by treating the rest of us in this country the way he felt treated as a child. We feel the humiliation that he must have felt as a child, and we end up feeling helpless and ridiculed. I mean, not anymore, but a lot of people are finally getting angry. But it's really been a long process of destruction.
What about his relationship with his father? Is it any healthier?
I have no idea other than what I read about it and my thoughts about it. My thoughts about it in terms of what he says and the nature of his interaction, I think that he also is quite contemptuous of his father, that he really doesn't respect his father.
Can you give us some examples of that?
Well, the most obvious one was at the Republican convention in 2004 when his father had been in the White House for 12 years, 8 as vice president, 4 as president, and Bush never let him speak at the convention. That's pretty humiliating. I think that even initially having him and Clinton be together for the Katrina stuff, or not Katrina, but for...
Katrina.
The attempt at putting them together is also a form of humiliation. I mean, that was its initial intent. It didn't work out that way. It backfired. But originally the idea was to humiliate his father by having him have to have a relationship with the man who beat him in 1992.
Mm.
So I think he is not a nice man towards his father.
We're going to take a break. I'm Liz Brown talking to Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch. We will be back. Stay with us.
For the issues that matter most to you, of course, it's AM 920 WGNU. This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Beirut. Lebanese officials say they are planning to sue Israel over the bombing of a power station that has created a large oil slick and caused widespread ecological damage. Environmental Minister Yaqub Saraf says damages are being sought under a provision in the International Court of Justice that says any intentional attack made to create widespread environmental damage constitutes a war crime. Thousands of tons of fuel oil went into the Mediterranean Sea when Israeli fighters bombed the Yihad power station in southern Lebanon in mid-July. Saraf says the cost of the cleanup, which includes the oil that has settled on the seabed, will be at least $100 million. One reason why the damage is so bad is that Israel had a sea blockade in place and no vessels could get into the area right away to do any cleanup work. The blockade stayed in place for 3 weeks after the August 14th ceasefire. And Dateline London. A school in South Wales is under fire after requiring all of its 1,400 students to submit to being fingerprinted. The children had their fingers scanned as part of a new biometric attendance count. Parents say the procedure was undertaken without their knowledge or permission. The headmaster of the school says letters were sent home at the beginning of the year informing them of the plan, and they only had a handful of parents express any concerns about it. He says the high-tech system will save the school some £25,000 by not having the staff do a pupil count each day. Some teacher officials say this concept reduces direct contact with students and teachers, which is an important part of the education process. The biometric scan system was developed by a subsidiary of General Dynamics, which creates software for military and intelligence purposes. This is your wake-up call global news update. Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
Hey everybody, this is Scott Cooper. Stay tuned for my show, Floral Design Inside and Out, coming up next on WGNU.
Honey, everything's coming up roses.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am having a conversation this hour with Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, and he is joining me from Washington, D.C. And, Doctor, welcome back. Looking at the relationship of George W. Bush with his mother and his father, okay, it appears to be minimally dysfunctional. What about the relationship he has with his brothers and sisters? Can we analyze that at this point?
I think that there's interesting bits of the relationship, but basically he is very much looked up to and admired, and at least when he was a kid and the firstborn, he really used his position as being the firstborn to constantly consolidate his own power as being appreciated and used the same techniques with his brothers and sister that he does with the press at the National Press Club. I mean, when he does something wrong or does something destructive, he turns it into a joke. It's like we showed that movie, that little film clip of looking for weapons of mass destruction under the desk in the Oval Office, and he couldn't find them. Where are those WMDs? And then the whole press corps erupts in laughter. That's the way he treats his siblings, too.
Does it make it, then, an astonishingly brave act for Steve Colbert to have done what he did at the...
Yes.
I mean, he has to be one of the bravest men in America.
He is one of the bravest men in America. I agree with you completely. He actually just stood up and did it and said exactly what he was thinking and made a mockery or, you know, really did. I mean, when he made that comment about, we don't look at... I forgot what it was now, but something about not looking at facts and that what we believe or what we think is what's important, and books really aren't important. I mean, this is really...
You don't need books for facts.
We don't need books or facts. I mean, this is just basically to say this in public in front of him and in front of everybody. Amazing.
1-877-920-WGNU, that is our number. Let me get to a couple of callers and some comments. Will, do you have a question or comment for Dr. Justin Frank?
Well, the good doctor just kind of stole my thunder with that, because that was the comment I wanted to ask him about. Was I thought that at the time that Bush made that comment about looking under the desk for the weapons of mass destruction, we had already lost many lives over there in Iraq, and I thought that was the epitome of insensitivity towards the people that had given their lives. It was like he was making a cruel joke about something, and at the time, that was the main premise for us going over there. I wanted him to comment on what that says about him as a person, and not just him, but the press that stood there and laughed at it, too.
The press, I think, that's a really important comment and question. I don't think I stole your thunder. I think that we have the same thunder. And I think it's important that more people like yourself and me and others of us see what's going on. Basically, it is a form of cruelty that he uses humor as a way of denying and deflecting any kind of criticism, because he preemptively makes a joke about himself while he is causing countless numbers of deaths and casualties from this war on false premises. It would be the same thing as shooting at his siblings with a BB gun and then cracking jokes about, wasn't that cool about how I almost hit you and I missed you and you looked so funny when you were running down the hall. That's what he would do, and he would get into that. And then they would laugh, but they would laugh partly with him, but mainly out of fear. I think that the press has been afraid of him. I think they've always been afraid of him, and I think he made it very clear that anybody who disagrees with him is finished.
Well, didn't he also surround himself with like-minded people?
Always.
That believe the same way?
He's found like-minded people who believe the same way, who will protect him against any kind of question that might come his way or any kind of doubt. He will not tolerate any person who might disagree with him. They are fired, they are finished, they are pushed out.
Now, let me ask you this question.
That's a good question that man asked.
And then let me ask you this question. In terms of assessing the intellectual ability of George W. Bush, we know he didn't do well in school. We know he didn't have good grades. Perhaps is it because of the alcohol abuse? Is it because he's not very smart? Can we say that he's not a very smart person?
I think he's a very smart person in a particular way. He's able, he's very cunning, he's a schemer. He can figure out how to get what he wants. He knows how to fool people, like a fraternity boy or a delinquent. He could hide things from his parents. He can hide things from the press. And he's just done this in a much more elaborate, grown-up, and powerful way, where now the world has become the stage for his shenanigans. So he closes off all public records. He doesn't allow any access. He closes off all family records. He gets rid of papers. I mean, he really hides things more than any president ever. And I think he's smart in that way. He's not smart in an academic way, I agree. He's not able to be a deep thinker, but he knows what he wants and he knows what he doesn't want, and he just goes for it. And that he is also very smart in figuring out how to undermine his opponents and how to attack them. But every once in a while you see his cruelty come out through the cracks in his personality, maybe through the cracks in his rectum too. But
what do we make of the comment of Condoleezza Rice saying, slipping, a single woman who's never been married, slipping and saying, "My husband, George W. Bush." What do you make of that? Can we make anything of that?
Well, I think it's a major slip that she made, which has to do with how much she loves him and how much she's attached to him.
Does it have anything?
He is her life, and they are deeply bonded. I don't know if it has any further meaning than that, but clearly she's married to him and married to her job.
But doctor, okay, I'm single. I have never been, I've never had a husband. That word would never come out of my mouth
never.
In reference. You don't slip and say something like that because that's not a word that you say. I mean, married women say my husband all the time. Single women do not.
They do not. And I think that also a lot of, I don't know too many single women who attached themselves to one man for so many years, to the extent that when she was being interviewed for the job of Secretary of State in front of the Senate, the cadence of her speech, her style of speech, sounded exactly like him. It was like she had merged with him.
Well, then maybe we need a Condoleezza on the Couch book too.
I think we do.
One of the things that you've said in your book, and there are a ton of people that want to talk to you, but let me get to this really quick. Dry drunk. You've assessed George Bush as a dry drunk. What does that mean?
A dry drunk is actually not a medical term, so I was reluctant to put it in the book. Mm-hmm. But a dry drunk is a term used in AA that it makes sense for him. It's a person who is an alcoholic who has had his alcohol consumption stopped. He doesn't drink, but the ism part of his alcohol use has been unchanged. Namely, he's easy to get into fights. He needs to see the world in an either-or way. He is quick to have a temper. He cannot tolerate anxiety, and he's constantly trying to do anything he can to manage anxiety. And so, but since he's chosen not to drink, he has to find other ways to manage anxiety by suppressing it and controlling it. And of course, he uses exercise, religion, short meetings, and he also uses ways of managing anxiety by making other people anxious around him, so he doesn't have to be anxious.
And
that's through his acts of cruelty.
And sleep as well. He makes certain that he gets to bed at a certain time.
Sleep, schedule, yes. Sleep, schedule, getting away, spending a lot of time away from the White House. I mean, he has lots of different things in his repertoire, weapons in his repertoire, to attack his own inner anxiety. But it doesn't work because he's never faced it.
Mm.
So the anxiety that's inside him is very much like unconscious terrorists that lurk inside of him. And no matter what he does, it doesn't go away.
Let me get to a couple more questions and comments here. Marty, you have a question for Dr. Justin Frank.
Yes, good morning, Liz. Good morning, Dr. Frank.
Good morning.
My problem with him is one of, you know, leadership. I mean, one thing of, you know, military importance, I feel, and this is probably true, respecting, you know, having respect for your enemy. And I don't see that, you know, with him, you know, in having that. His military advisors that are around him, they might have that, and I'm sure they do, but he, you know, wants this absolute control in calling the shots. And I feel, you know, that's what's going wrong right now with the
All
whole
right.
situation.
Thank you very much.
A great observation. He does not have any respect for his enemies. They are just evil, destructive, horrible people. And I think that his use of contempt and lack of respect makes him both a bad leader, but also reflects his own fears, that he can only fight with people through contempt and through putting them down, and that even applies to how he would be a leader in a military situation. A general who respects the enemies actually, whenever any of the generals respect the enemy, they get fired by this administration because they say, we need more troops. No, you don't.
Dr. Justin Frank, author of Bush on the Couch, as always, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And what's the White Rose? Where do I find you?
WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Okay.
All right.
I really, every time we talk, I learn more than I give, so I enjoy it a lot.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Dr.
You.
Frank. Take care now.
Okay.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Until then, stay strong.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the